The following audio content is a talk from Convergence, a service for young adults at University Presbyterian Church in Seattle, Washington. For more information, please visit our website at upc.org/young-adults.
Hey, if you're just joining us tonight, we're glad you're here. We're glad you made it out. We normally do have chairs for you, but we are going to do something a little different. You can see some stuff around in the back, and we push the communion table to the front, but we're glad you're here no matter where you're coming from. If you're just checking things out tonight or what you're bringing in from your day, the whole point of as we gather is that our hope, our desire is that as a community of people, broken people, not perfect people, broken people, that we would begin to discover something more of who Jesus is in our life and the reality that that could actually work out the power, the forgiveness, the love that we want to see happen in our lives so that we can see it happen in other lives as well. So we're glad you're here. And that's what we're doing. Tonight, we're going to mix it up a little bit. And we're going to do a whole bunch of stuff at once. We're going to be community together. We're going to worship together. We've already done some of that. We're going to serve together. But I want to take a little break out of the normal rhythm that we've had with this whole series. We've been looking at relationships and building strong relationships. How do we set a trajectory right now for ourselves, whether we're dating or newly married or about to get married or thinking about getting married? How do we start setting a trajectory now so that it can be a marriage that lasts? Because sometimes what we do is we get going and we go down a trail and a trail that actually leads us into a place that is just unsustainable. It doesn't work. It doesn't last. We want to break tonight to do something different for us to be able to pull back a little bit and to think about what is it, who are we as a community? And perhaps a little bit about where we're going. So if you're brand new, this is actually a perfect night for you to be here because you get to find out a little bit. We don't always talk about what we're about or we just go ahead and do it, but we want to take some time I want to share with you some things about who we are and about where we're going to be going here in the next while. I just marked 4 years for me here. It's crazy that it's been that long. Thank you. It's almost killed me trying to keep up with you guys, but I made it. It's been a great, great 4 years. I've loved it. It's been unbelievable. I have been so blessed by this community that I just don't think that there's any other pastors in this church that get blessed like I do from you guys. I mean, honestly, it's humbling. It really has been an unbelievable privilege. Some of what I felt like I wanted to do back in the fall, as I said, in the midst of ministry, it's hard to reflect. I mean, all of our lives, it's hard for us to pull back and reflect, isn't it, sometimes? But I wanted to clear out some time, and I said, what have I learned? As I kind of jumped in here and somebody hired me and trusted me and I didn't really know what I was doing, but we set off and we began to move and move into the place we're at now. Well, I began to reflect, what have I learned? And I've been able to sit back, and there's some things that have just, for me, I go, man, I've learned a ton. There's some things that have settled for me. And tonight, what I want to do is, in some ways, just share three convictions. Maybe even three confessions with you guys. I want to bring you into some of the things that I've been thinking about over the last while. Because I get to do stuff here with you guys. But a lot of what I do is I talk about you guys in the wider community. In fact, outside of this church with my colleagues. And usually, I'm going to say 99% I brag about you guys. I'm sure it's the same the other way. 99% you brag about me instead of rolling your eyes. But I brag about you guys. And I talk about you guys because I am obsessed with you. Okay? You guys are looking for the door now? Weird. I don't even know this guy. No, I'm obsessed. And I know that it's a weird thing to say because normally when we hear obsession, it is a bad thing. Except think about our relationships. You want the person that you love to be obsessed with you. You want them to think about you during the day. You don't want to come home at the end of the night and, you know, you've worked a hard day. Let's say you're married and you're like, hey, how was your day? And, you know, then you ask that little question, did you think about me? And, you know, your significant other goes, not really. Why? Did you think about me? Right? You don't want that. But the thing with obsession, though, is when we try to possess something, that's when it gets weird. But I don't feel too bad because I think Paul, felt somewhat similarly. He was an obsessed person. He was someone who was driven by a goal, driven by a commission. In Colossians 1, he says this. He says, I have become a servant. He's talking about the gospel. A servant by the commission God gave me to present you the word of God in all its fullness. The mystery that has been kept hidden for ages and generations, but is now disclosed to the saints, to them that God has chosen to make known among the Gentiles, the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. He's saying, look, I have been called to the Gentiles. In fact, the Jews didn't really like him, okay? His own people didn't really like him. But he said, you know, I am passionate. Even though people don't get me, even though people say I'm wasting my time, even though people think they don't deserve it, I want them to know Christ in you, the hope of glory. I want them you to know the gospel. And he goes on, he says, I pour myself out. I pour myself out. He goes on to say, we proclaim him, that being Christ, and teaching everyone with all wisdom that we may present everyone perfect in Christ. It's to this end that I labor, struggling with all his energy, which so powerfully is at work in me. And for me, there are two things that I get obsessed with. I'm obsessed with this time of life. Because it is a time when we start setting the trajectory that we're going to follow for a long time. And we're going to set, in a sense, a momentum. And that momentum is going to carry us because we're going to start, we're going to decide what we're going to do when we go to school. Some of us are going to go to school, graduate school, doctoral work. Some of us are going to start heading into our careers, and it's going to take us down a particular path. We're deciding a lot of times who we're going to be around and who our friends are going to be and what our community is and where we're going to live and all this stuff. We're now, in this time, 20s and 30s, we're setting the trajectory of our life. And the decisions that we make right now are huge. They're huge. They're huge in your life. They're huge in the life of the family that is yet to be. They'll be huge in your workplace. They'll be huge in the life of the church. They'll be huge in the life of the city. The trajectory that we set now is huge. And it's right now. It's in this time. It's when we're deciding what is really valuable at the end of the day. What are we really going to be about at the end of the day? Who is the person that we're going to choose to be married to? For those of us who will be married, and some of us won't, who is that person going to be? And that is going to have a huge influence on your life, for good or not. And some of us know about that. This is an unbelievable time. See, it's the time when we start taking leadership within our local churches. And here's the thing, the church is going to be fine. Okay? It's not like sometimes people will talk about next generation stuff and they'll say, well, you know, if we don't reach out, the church is going to die. The church is not going to die. The church might be weak. Okay? The church has gone through times and when it has been weak, it's been ineffective. It doesn't die. And it's not going to die. You can't kill it. Okay? That's one thing I'm confident about, which I'm really glad. All right? It's God's church. It'll always survive. You try to kill it, it'll actually explode underneath you. The other thing, though, is what Paul talks about is he says, this is my hope. He goes, not that you just receive this message, but I want you to live a life worthy of the gospel that's come to you. And I've talked about that with you before, and that's for me. I long for you guys to know the power of the resurrection in your life, because I want it for myself, and I want it for you. And when we start making decisions according to what God has called us to be instead of what culture has dictated to us, that's when we begin to change our trajectory in such a way that we actually start changing the trajectory of a culture around us. Cities get changed. Families get changed. Some of you have come from dysfunctional families, and the decisions that you make right now, the work that you do right now, on whether you're going to continue the same old dysfunction that you grew up with, or whether you're going to do some hard work. You're going to look in there and you're going to ask for God's forgiveness and his grace to begin to take a different step in a different direction. And you're going to pass on to your kids, for those of you who have kids, a very different life than what you had. You're going to change the trajectory of your family as you begin to grow into completion in Christ. See, there's lots of stuff. You know, every job's got stuff that you like and doesn't like. And, you know, I'm not an administrative guy. There's stuff I can't stand, okay? It's like every job. It makes it worth it for me when I hear stories about people who talk about that somehow, in a small part, that perhaps this ministry, this community, helped them to understand what their call is, and they've been searching for a call for years. That makes my job worth it. I will knock myself out for that. It makes it worth it when I see people change the way that they interact and see themselves with other, because they begin to understand that God loves them profoundly. And they begin to start moving the way that they view themselves, and so the way that they act around other people, and they start making decisions that go on and on and on. They start actually dating people. The kind of people that they deserve to be with, not people who treat them like garbage. Those conversations make it worth it for me. The conversations where I see people who sometimes I feel like they're floundering, or feel like God it's not real, or you know what, I don't think God is actually true or good or all this kind of stuff. It's not working out. He's not coming through for me. And they begin to understand grace in a deeper level than God just gives me good stuff and I kind of do my religious duty. When they begin to understand a grace that cannot be taken away by anything, I hear those stories, and I get to hear those stories. That makes my job worth it. That is what I love, and that is what I'm obsessed about. Now, here's the thing. This is God's. And what Paul talks about is to present, to give away. He wants to present others for Christ. This is God's ministry. It's not my ministry, and at some point I'll be gone. And the ministry will continue on. He'll call me into some other place, and we'll all continue on, and we all will all leave, and change will always happen. But somehow he's captured me for that. I'm obsessed with you guys. Second thing is this. My great desire, and a lot of you guys know this, my great desire is to figure out how we can live connected, because so much of our lives are fractured. We live with incredible autonomy, and yet we are incredibly fractured. And so many of us, we move around and we bounce around, and we're busy, and we have lots of opportunity, and that's great. And yet we are isolated and lonely. We're trying to figure out why does this faith thing not work? And it's because we're just by ourselves. You can't do faith by yourselves. I long for you to get connected, not just to the gospel, but to other people, to a community who can come around you, to find those brothers and sisters that can walk with you, even when you bring your doubts and your junk, and will still pick you up and keep you going. I long for you to be connected into something wider than just this particular time of life. Momentum decade. Sometimes I think about it. These years where we're saying, a lot of times what we do in our society, right? We pull and we fracture, and we come into these, we either isolate ourselves and then we buy into this ideology of individualism that somehow, as if I could just do whatever I want in my own private world, I'm going to be satisfied, and we end up realizing we're miserable. But more than that, then sometimes we just segment with people that are just like ourselves, or just are in our own stage of life. And that's good. That's important. And yet I long for us to be part of a smaller community, as part of this larger community. One in which the richness of this church and any church is the generations. I long for us to be connected into something bigger than what is just in this room. And so we look for opportunities. Tonight, this opportunity in the back is an opportunity for us to partner with deacons, people who have probably never really been in this room before on this given night. But they have done a collection so that we can begin to put together these hygiene kits, because a while ago, we're part of a coalition to reach out to the homeless in this area. And part of it is having these hygiene kits for people that need that. Well, Nicholsville, it was an encampment that was here a little while ago. It was right next door, and it just wiped out the supplies. Well, now we have an opportunity as a church to begin to replenish that, so that we can provide some tangible help to those that need it. Well, we get to get connected to a wider community, a bigger community. We actually get to be connected to other churches. I'm passionate about you being connected into Seattle, and so it's why I bring up things like Kairos. I talked about things like Global Health Initiative, which there's another gathering, by the way, this weekend, so that you can get connected to other people, especially if you're in the medical field, that are thinking about how to take on some of the huge giants that are plaguing our world today in global health. There are some phenomenal people in this local community, but also throughout Seattle. People of faith who are saying, I want to use everything I got to begin to, in the service of beginning to make a tangible difference in the lives of God's children around the world. I want you to be connected into that, because when you do, you're going to have huge impact and you're going to grow like crazy. I long for us to get connected, and the problem is that it's hard. And we've tried lots of things over the years, and it doesn't always work. And yet, we have to keep pushing for it and figuring it out, because there's too many groups, you guys. When I think about this age group in particular, there are too many groups in which we're just isolated on our own, or we go and we start our own churches where it's just us and a couple of people. There's nothing wrong with that. That is really important. But how can we figure out how to begin to bridge the generations? I don't have the answer. So let me know if you do. But I want to figure it out. See, as we do faith together, we're supposed to do faith connected. And that's the thing that I've loved. Because I've seen you guys volunteer hours and hours of your time, take huge risks, go out on a limb, reach out to your friends, organize service nights. I just get to sit back and watch what you guys have done, because we have to do it together as the people. I can't do it. It's not up to the paid church people to do it. It's up for us as a community to do it. And it's been awesome for me to sit back and witness what happens when we as a community look out and say, what does God want to do with us, and how can we each play our role? We don't do it perfectly. But we're pushing more and more and more into that. Last confession is this. I want to lean into change and not fear it. Change is inevitable. Change happens. Any community, if it does not change, it dies. Any community. God is always, here's the theological conviction. God is always on the move, always doing something new, always redeeming some new part of society, new part of culture, new part of the world. He's always raising up new leaders. And so there's always new forms of how things look. It always changes. The forms are not the thing. Now, the things that are the basic confessions of the church, that does not change. It's the same thing. It's been the same thing for 2,000 years. And yet the form always has to change. And a church will die when they start looking at, or any community, or any group of people that are gathered together will die when they start fearing change, or when they start mixing up what is truly solid and what is truth and what changes. And so after a while you think, well, you know, at one point we had a certain, this is what happens with worship services all the time. At one point we go, well, you know, we have a pipe organ. And we do songs. Well, God must love pipe organs. That's what matters. And so here's what happened. Mission agencies, when they want to reach out to communities in Africa, go, if they really want to do worship right, we need to send them a pump organ. I kid you not, there are warehouses full. There's stories about this, about warehouses full of pipe organs. Because a pipe organ is not what worship is about. And yet sometimes we get married to a particular form. And you guys, some of you guys who have grown up in the church know that. You know that, like, you know, we have one kind of program, and so we stick to that program, and then we never let it go. Even when we drive it into the ground, everybody hates it. So here's three things that are pushing change for us, because change is coming for convergence. And I want to be ahead of it, not behind it. Three things. First is the development of the 7 p.m. Okay, some of you know we have a 7 p.m. service, and I and people before me have longed for a service, not that is just cool for the kids, but is a new expression of timeless truths. And so that has happened, and the 7 has started off, and it's great, and it's an answer to prayer from those who have gone before me as well as for me. I love it. And yet there's still a need for something, for some kind of gathering. I think as we push into more community, and as we push into mission together, as we push into growing together, there's something that is needed besides Sunday. And for some of you, you go somewhere else on Sunday. And I don't care. That's great. I just care that we are growing as the people of God, that we are beginning to raise up leaders and be the people that God has called us to be. So, but what does it mean for this to not replicate, or this not to be exactly the same as Sunday? Okay, I want to start to figure out, and now that we, especially here at this community, that we have a seven, and that is important, but how do we begin to complement what happens on Sunday instead of simply reproduce it? When this community that I was entrusted to started, it was another worship service. We don't need another worship service, but we do need something else. So how can we begin to complement what happens on Sundays? Second thing that's pushing change is that we have some restrictions that are coming our way. And I just want to share this with you. This is this kind of stuff that I'm sitting in and I'm praying right now. Some of you know, obviously we all know that the economy has been bad. And nonprofits have gotten hit. Of course. So has this community. This community had to cut over $1 million in staffing alone last year. So we reorganized a bunch of things. And part of that was that we lost the other full-time person besides myself. Amber moved over into missions, and she's now doing about 6 different jobs in one. Okay, we're working on that. Well, to help bridge kind of the transition of that, the session, the elders, the leadership of the church was gracious enough to give us kind of a bridge position. That's what Sarah has. But Sarah's is done on June 30th. It's an interim position. And we haven't made a lot of it because we talked about that at the beginning, but she has done a fantastic job in helping us as we've kind of moved through this year I've had some time to think about kind of what's the future. But we're gonna be restricted next year. And so there's a couple of big questions that are going to come up. Part for me is I need to think, okay, what is it that I need to do and what do I need to not do? Both because for my own sanity and capacity, but also because it's not my job, it's your job. And maybe I'm stealing something that is really something that you are being called to do. It also opens up an opportunity as we begin to think about that ultimately that God is not constrained by staffing or dollars or anything else. He has given us all that he needs. And so there's going to be opportunity for us together as a community to be able to move forward. But it's going to mean that some of you are going to need to step up in some new ways. That's just the reality of where we're going. And it means that we're going to be doing some cutting back on some things. So I ask for your prayer as I begin to think through some of that stuff and as I discern with various groups. The last thing is this, is that it feels like there's been something for me that has been stirring on a next stage, and it has to do with space and where we meet. And I'm letting you in early on this because I don't know what this means exactly. I don't know. It's not a done deal. When I first came in here, we were down in the sanctuary, and for lots of reasons, that space was not conducive to what we wanted to do. So we actually moved into the park. And part of that was a good reminder for us that we were the people of God and that church or being church is not about being in a building with stained glass windows. We could do it in the park just as well. And eventually we moved into this particular room. And this is a banquet room, okay? It's not even that interesting of a room. Okay, but we throw up some stuff because we want to somehow figure out how do we create this into a sacred space, into a space that allows us to connect. One of the things that I've wondered about is there a next move for us? What is the best space for us to accomplish what God is calling us to do as we think about reaching out to those in their 20s and 30s to provide with them with a kingdom vision, to introduce them to Jesus, to send them off, to make impact in the world wherever God has called them to be. Where's the best place for that? And one of the things that has been on my mind for a while is union. Union is the church plant that we sent out a while ago, and it is right down at South Lake Union, right in the midst of the biotech sector. And I was pushed recently on this to think about this more and more. The space is better. The space is conducive more to what we do. It's great. It's very. You guys would love it. But that's not the biggest thing. Part of it is that it's also strategic. As we think about my heart, anyways, our heart, I believe, is that we would be able to impact the city, that we're not just trying to kind of, We're not just here for ourselves. We're here to make an impact in the city. And so what an opportunity for us is, as God has opened up opportunity downtown, to be able to move into this area right in the heart of Seattle. So these are just a number of things, but I ask you guys to pray with me on this. Okay, I don't have things set out, but it's not ultimately up to me. It's how God wants to lead us. So how can we begin to push into this call that God has given us? How can we begin to think about bridging and expanding our connections? How can we begin to change? Not for the sake of change, not because we're bored, not because we want to do something else, but change because we're following God, and God is always out in front of us. Well, tonight, here's what we're going to do. We're going to engage in get up and do a little bit something different with worship. We're going to be playing some music here in a moment, and then we're going to have a time where you can take communion. You can be prayed for if you like. I'd encourage you to if you want, to go over and write down just your prayers, your thoughts, both on what is it that you long for your friends and coworkers and families to wake up to. To wake up, to have eyes to see to. And what would it, on the other one is, what would it mean to for us to be the kind of place where people are welcomed home? Just like many of you know the story of the prodigal son, in which the son basically flips off his dad, runs away, bottoms out, and when he comes back, his dad doesn't wag his finger, but he embraces him and throws a party for him. What would it mean for us to be that kind of community?